Hi, did you miss us? Actually, don't answer that. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush, you are there, right?
I believe I'm here in spirit, anyways.
Excellent. So we have plenty to talk about with Marquette basketball, even though it is September, kind of an odd time to record one, but there's been so much going on in recruiting, plus the Big East schedule is out. We felt that warranted a podcast and a little bit of discussion, so I'm excited to kind of go through some of these things, Phil, and kind of, I don't know, I've missed Marquette basketball. It's nice to have something to talk about.
It's kind of back in our wheelhouse, and that can soothe the injured soul after certain games that were lost last night in embarrassing fashion.
Yeah, the funny thing is you're talking to basically half of the fan base.
Correct. And then 25% of them are super excited, and the other 25% are wishing Robbie Gould were still on the Bears.
Yeah, so we're recording this Monday night. It will probably be up on Tuesday morning on September the, what is that,
20th.
September 20th, so that's when we'll start posting it up. Anyway, let's get into some of this recruiting news, Phil. For those of you who have not been following the recruiting news that closely, Marquette got two commits in the past week. That would bring their 2017 class to three already, as they have four available slots for next year as things currently stand. You probably already knew about Ike Ike, who's a power forward from Detroit, Michigan. He's a 6'9", 215 power forward, three-star kid. He committed way back in June. But the two big ones Marquette got last week, the first one happened on Tuesday the 13th. That would be Theo John. He's a power forward as well, 6'8", 210, three-star kid out of Minneapolis. This is a guy I've kind of been seeing people tweeting about with in relation to Marquette for quite a while. It came down to Marquette in Minnesota. He decided to leave the state and come across state lines to the good side, to the Wisconsin side, and go attend Marquette. And then on Saturday, as we were all, or many of us anyway, were watching college football, a little bit of Marquette news slipped into the Twitter feed when I saw Jamal Kane committed. Now, he is a 6'7 small forward. He's a four-star kid. He's so far the highest-rated commit Wojo has in this class. He is out of Michigan, and so he was actually on his visit last week. So, really productive week for Wojo last week. Phil, what do you make of the class so far?
Well, we're no longer going to complain about not having size on this roster come next season.
And it's 6'9", 6'8", and 6'7", so
yes,
far.
Yeah. So that with Luke Fisher graduating after this season, that'll bring four kind of big men type presence.
So they will be the second, third, and fourth tallest guys on the roster next year.
Yep. So, you know, and I think there's enough, just at the surface level, there's enough differentiation. I think people have a tendency to look at heights, you know, as a raw statistic and say, oh, these guys are all playing the same position. But I think there's enough differentiation between the players that it'll spread out nicely. One of the things that's interesting is Ike Ike is an AAU teammate with Kane. So with Jamal Kane. So I wonder how much influence one had on the other. And you would think that they know each other's games, so there's not any concern about one stealing minutes from the other or what have you.
Yeah, as far as like recruiting rankings and things go, depending on how much you pay attention, this may not be the most highly rated class Wojo has brought in yet, but as far as filling positions of need, I think they've done really well so far. I thought Anonymous Eagle did a really good job maybe tracking some things they were doing over the last 2 weeks. I think there was one day a couple weeks ago, like at first thing in the morning, they were in Buffalo, and then they were in Michigan, and then they were in Minnesota, and like different coaches were in different places, and they were just all over the place. The coaching staff has really been busting it all over basically the north to northeastern parts of the United States over the last 2 or 3 weeks trying to nail down this class. So it has to feel good for that coaching staff to fill some needs. You know, like I said, it's not like they're bringing necessarily five-star guys, but these are guys that they have been on for quite a while, especially Theo John and Jamal Kane. I mean, they've been kind of after them for quite a while. So it has to feel good that they brought these guys in, and it seems like a lot of credit does go to Stan Johnson. He's kind of really earning a reputation as a rock-solid recruiter and closer for Wojo.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been linked with a number of I believe he was linked with Hanif Cheatham and Marcus Howard.
He was a big reason. He was definitely the lead on the Marcus
Howard. Marcus Howard, he recruited to Arizona State before he came to Marquette.
Right.
Was it Arizona State? Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, but, you know, and one of the things that's interesting, we talk about recruiting and the coaching. Jamal Cain, there, I wandered outside of my own sphere of internet existence and happened upon a Michigan thread, a message for him around their basketball program. And if you believe internet postings, one of the things that was interesting around the Jamal Cain recruitment was there seemed to be a couple of, you know, a couple of insiders or so they claimed, but they kind of highlighted that Michigan was interested in Cain and his mom seemed very enamored with Michigan, but that Michigan had so many targets, they kind of had a light touch with Cain, and Wojo was in like all the time, was constantly in the form of Stan Johnson, were constantly in touch with Cain and constantly kind of keeping in contact with him and made it really, you know, at least it was implied that they really made it aware that Marquette really wanted Cain, and that had an impact on him because from a school and academics, you know, Cain's mom, while she liked Marquette, seemed to indicate even in a newspaper interview that she really loved the Michigan setup, but there just wasn't enough mutual interest there. So it kind of shows, we've talked about in past seasons, that Wojo seems to go very targeted, very intense at players. And I think
once they zero in on a guy, yeah, I mean, it's good to be wanted for these kids, you know, right?
Right.
It's important to feel wanted, but yeah, once Wojo feels like they've really made a lot of headway, they close very well, I think.
Yeah, and I think they're continuing. I mean, there's a lot of names still mentioned out there for the last open slot that we'll touch on in a little bit, but I do think they're still continuing that. We're hearing Marquette mentioned with more and more players than we did originally in his first season, but I do think they're still continuing a relatively narrow focus. They may be opening up and making more offers, but I think they're still very focused on the players they really want, and they're only turning towards, you know, some of the other players they're mentioned with as a secondary if for some reason. And I also think, just as an addendum to that, I do think what they're doing is they're kind of reading the tea leaves, and if they've got a good vibe, they'll go hard. If they don't have a good vibe, I think they'll cut bait early. And so I think they're just being smart about where they're allocating their recruiting time and resources.
Yeah, I think they've certainly done a great job so far. It's nice as a fan who just, like, you look at the roster and say, gosh, we need size. And then to see, it would be so disappointing, even if they were talented kids, or maybe not disappointing, but concerning, if they went out and signed, you know, 6'3" or 6'4" swingmen who may be talented, but just like, well, are we going to rebound? But it's great that these needs are getting filled, and it seems like they plan on adding even more size. So again, 4 spots available as the scholarship table currently stands. As we all know, it's kind of silly to assume that everyone will return or that, you know, people won't leave early or whatnot. But again, as things currently stand, Marquette has 1 scholarship available for this year. That was the one left by Wally Ellenson. And then 3 guys who are about to graduate, Luke Fisher, Juwan Johnson, and then Caton Reinhart. So 4 spots available for 2017. We've touched on the 3 who have already verbally committed. I'm assuming you would hope they're going to sign early then in November and then get locked down. But so as far as where that 4th scholarship might go, there are 3 definitely obvious targets. Now, there may be some other recruits that Marquette may be talking to as well. But as far as possibly, you know, more immediate action, guys who maybe could commit by the time this podcast hits the air or within the next 2 or 3 weeks. One is obvious, Hassan French. He is a power forward, 6'7", 225. He's from Middletown, New York. He visited Marquette a couple weeks ago. He named a final 6 of no order: Marquette, VCU, UMass, St. Louis, Minnesota, and UNLV. And actually, I saw a tweet earlier on Monday evening that the Marquette coaching staff was at his school again on Monday night watching an open gym. So they're trying to close that deal as well. So Hassan French is definitely one. The other one that is definitely in the mix is visiting this coming weekend. That would be the weekend of September 23rd. Xavier Tillman. He is a power forward, 6'9", 250, from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, some of these other guys, you know, you listed their heights and weights, they sound a little skinny. 6'9", 250, that is not skinny. This guy's got a lot of muscle, and he would easily be the highest rated guy in this class if Marquette's able to close the deal with Xavier Tillman. A lot of people seem to think, though, that he is almost got one foot in the door at Michigan State, but he is visiting Marquette this weekend, and Marquette is going to be Tillman's last visit. And then his mom said in an article that was posted about 2 or 3 weeks ago that his Final Four would come down to Michigan State, Purdue, and Florida, and that he would make a decision probably 2 or 3 weeks after his last visit. And so that is Marquette. And then so we'll get back to him in a minute, Phil. And then the last one is Jordan Nwora. He is a 6'8 small forward from Buffalo, New York. They definitely were visiting him a lot before Kane committed. I don't know what his status is now that Kane is on board. I'm sure Marquette's probably staying in touch because they've got a scholarship available for sure. But we'll see what happens with him. No visit has taken place, nor has it been scheduled yet when it comes to Nwora and Marquette. But let's get back to those other two guys I was talking about, Phil. Xavier Tillman presents an interesting opportunity this coming weekend if Wojo is able to get a verbal commitment on his official visit this weekend, because he would be a huge addition and a guy who could probably compete for a lot of minutes in his first year.
Yeah, well, and like you mentioned, he's much less, I mean, big men, even more so than guards, are kind of development, right? You really don't expect big men to produce in their freshman year or even in some instances their sophomore year. They just kind of got to grow into their bodies, put muscle mass on, you know, kind of learn to play with their size. But I think with Xavier Tillman, he presents a much more, you know, kind of college basketball ready body. I mean, that seems like someone from the start that you could pair with a Matt Helt, who's got some experience, run them down low, or even depending on how his game plays out, you know, kind of run a four out, one in kind of offense with Tillman as kind of the rebounder and rim protector. So I think that kind of presents one of those things where you get an embarrassment of riches, where you've got at least some different pieces you can pick and choose from at any given time as they develop. So I think that would be a significant development. French, you know, he's probably got a less refined game, but he's certainly physically ready. So it's kind of like, hey, either one you'd probably take, right? I mean, and you'll worry about who gets minutes later.
I mean, I don't think either one of these guys is being treated like a plan B for Marquette right now. I mean, the fact that they were out there in New York on Monday visiting French with Tillman coming in, I mean, you know, they're trying to get that last verbal commitment, you know, and I don't know, like, exactly, you know, how Marquette recruits and what they say to the kids and stuff. Of course, you would never know that because they can't really talk about, you know, what they say to kids and stuff like that, at least until well after the fact. But I know it works this way in football sometimes, where you say to a kid, well, we only got one spot, you know, we're only going to take one more power forward, and maybe so if you want it, you can verbal commit and we can give you this spot right now, but if you don't want to verbally commit, you know, I can't promise we're going to have this spot for you here in a couple weeks, so what do you say? And who knows, maybe that may be what they were doing when Jamal Cain was in town last week. You know, again, not saying they do that this way, but I'm saying it is one way that coaches could possibly recruit. Hey, we're taking one swingman in this class, and the spot's yours if you want it, if we can get that verbal commitment today. If not, you know, we've been talking with Jordan Nwora over there, so we'll see what he says in a couple weeks. So I'd be interested to know if maybe if the coaches are kind of using a little leverage here and saying, look, scholarship table's just about full. Do you want this last spot or not? And so we'll see how this thing kind of plays out over the next 2 or 3 weeks here after Tillman's visit, and see if, you know, if French pulls the trigger or if he's going to wait a little while longer or if Tillman jumps in, and see if Marquette slows the recruiting down for 2017 or if they're going to go for a fifth. I'd be surprised if they went for a sixth. That's kind of a big class considering the way with the guys Marquette has returning. But who knows? You never stop recruiting, and you never stop, you know, talking to guys, even if you do have the scholarship table full.
Right. Well, and you know, you take. It's always better to have, you know, the bird in the hand than two in the bush, right? So you take the first player that commits, and, you know, in that last roster spot, and if you get two, okay, you figure it out, and then,
as they say, these things work themselves out.
Correct. But it's definitely, I mean, if you think about it, it's a roster. There's some balancing things that have to go on, as you pointed out. You know, in the incoming class, you really, for this season, you've got Sam Hauser and Marcus Howard, right? So you got two players in this year's freshman class. Presumably, you'd like to have no fewer than three in a class. So if they're going to over-recruit, you know, maybe you're looking at more of a transfer or something like that. But and the other thing is, you don't want to have all of your size in one class, right?
That would be the interesting thing to me. If Marquette, say, does add another power forward, you know, once everybody gets on campus, and maybe the depth chart kind of sorts itself out a little bit, wouldn't be surprised if one of these bigs, maybe the guy who's last on the depth chart, it becomes a redshirt candidate. And, you know, that's not a decision you have to make on day one, you know?
Don't actually have to make the decision ever unless you decide to play that person.
Right. And unless, once you say, all right, we've played in X amount of games or X number of minutes, whatever the deadline is. But say, you know, you get into January and the kid's seen the floor once for 2 minutes. Well, then you say, you know, you're the 13th man on this roster, and I think a redshirt's in your best interest. And so, you know, I would keep an eye on that. That's something maybe to look for way down the road. But, again, as I say, seems like repeatedly, you can't rotate 12, 11 guys. You know, you're not going to rotate that. Somebody's going to sit. So if they are able to add one more big in this class, wouldn't surprise me at all if, whoever ends up last on the depth chart becomes a redshirt candidate. Because, again, that, like you said, Phil, you don't want to be in a situation 4 years from now where you have four power forwards graduating. And then you're like, well, there goes literally all of our size in one class. So it would be nice to spread them out a little bit and get one guy and get a guy redshirted. So I don't know if they have a solid plan right now. They don't necessarily need a solid plan. First plan right now is just, hey, let's get all these guys verbally committed and then get them signed in November.
Well, you know what's kind of interesting? I would, you know, if you look at the trend in, you know, if you broadly kind of lump things into like classes, right? So you've got, let's just say you've got shooters and you've got big men, right? Let's pretend it doesn't exist where you've got people like Draymond Green, where they're both. But you've got kind of the shooter slashers and you've got the size. You know, Wojo's kind of been careening from one side of the road to the other in terms of, okay, we've got size, but no real shooters. Now this season coming up, we're going to have what appears to be a lot of shooters, but not a ton of effective size. Next year, you know, if everybody comes in that we're projecting and we get a fourth big man, you're going to start to see that, you know, kind of the bouncing to the extremes seems to maybe level off as you get, you know, while the classes themselves in terms of absolute numbers may not balance, the skill sets seem to balance more.
It is good to have a nice balanced roster where you've got some depth and you've got, you know, basically two or three guys at every position, because some guys maybe, you know, bleed over to different spots on the depth chart. You know, you got your swing men and you play power forward and center. So, yeah, I think balance-wise, the 2017-2018 team should look pretty balanced as far as positions. Like I said, this coming year, Marquette will be a little small, because basically it's just going to be Fisher and Hell rotating in the middle, and then you know, it's just going to be a bunch of guys 6'6 or shorter. Maybe Hauser's a little taller than that, but those are basically going to be the guys playing the other four positions. So Marquette will be a little short this year, but it's good to see them adding size for 2017.
Well,
so,
you know who maybe benefits from this kind of roster, like turnover and composition change, are going to be players like Sandy Cohen and Sakara Nim, who can move maybe to more natural positions for their size in terms of a two guard or a three, as opposed to having to play a small power forward.
Yeah, I mean, there may be games this year where Sakar or Sandy have to play the four, you know, just out of necessity, just because, you know, Wojo's, when it comes to crunch time, Wojo's going to put the five guys he trusts out there the most, right? And if there's foul trouble with Helt and or Fisher, well, you know, then you might have Sandy at the five. But yeah. So we'll see how that plays out again. So if you're a big recruiting honk and you like to keep up with that stuff, definitely keep your eye on Twitter in the next week or two, because, again, Tillman is visiting on the 23rd. He has said he will make a decision a week or two after that. So early October, probably before Marquette Madness, he would probably have a decision one way or the other if he's going to Marquette, Michigan State, Purdue, Florida, or other.
There's always another.
And again, French and Noir are probably the two other big names. And the thing is, if Marquette gets none of those guys, probably not a disaster, but, you know, maybe disappointing for sure. But I'm sure there are other guys that Marquette is staying in touch with as, say, that next tier of guys. But they seem to be really after those three, trying to get at least one to fill out this four-man class for 2017. Hey, before we move on to the schedule, Phil, I do want to touch on 2018 a little bit. Now, again, this is assuming a lot, but assuming the scholarship table goes as planned, that Marquette gets one more in this class and that everyone currently on the roster stays for all of their eligibility. Marquette has three spots available for 2018, one of which has been filled. You may remember, of course, Brendan Bailey, who's on a two-year Mormon mission. He will arrive as a 20-year-old freshman in 2018, so that leaves, again, as things stand, two spots available for 2018. Marquette did lose one of its big targets this past week. Tyler Hero, he decided to commit to Wisconsin. What you going to do?
Boo.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen. Hey, when you go, if we're going to be real about it, if you're going to go deep in the tournament as often as Wisconsin has over the last 3 or 4 years, you're going to get kids in-state, and they got Tyler Hero. So I'm not even going to play the Wojo cooled on him game with Hero. Marquette obviously wanted Hero, didn't get him, so he's going to go with his buddy Kobe King to Madison. But there's still plenty of targets. Wojo is actually Marquette is actually recruiting a lot of guys in this 2018 class. Marquette has been associated with a lot. How interested they all are, really kind of hard to tell right now. Obviously, one who's going to be, there's definitely a lot of mutual interest, of course, between Marquette and Sam Hauser's younger brother, Joey, who it looks to be a top 25-ish recruit in the 2018 class. I think it's going to be quite a fight between Marquette and Wisconsin for Joey Hauser. And there's going to be other teams as well. Michigan State's in on them pretty big. But that's kind of the big one that jumps out, Phil, as far as filling those last two spots for 2018.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing that you're going to – so one of those spots is definitely – I mean, if he were to commit, Joey Hauser would for sure be reserved one of those. That's a guaranteed spot.
He's got a spot if he wants.
He's got a spot.
Absolutely.
No, it doesn't matter. And like we said, you can always, you know, things work themselves out. So if we get an embarrassment of riches, so be it. But I do think one of those spots, and you'll notice that Wojo seems he's going after all big men this recruiting season. So he must feel very confident in the point guard position that he has on the roster now. But you got to think, for starting that, one of those two spots would probably be looking at a point guard in waiting, because right now we've got Rousey, Tracy Carter, Marcus Howard. But amongst the three of those, for sure you've got to have a high-level point guard. And then you've certainly got Dwayne Wilson and/or Hanif Cheatham that have some point guard ability. So there's
– Yeah, but if you're talking 2018, Rousey correct. And Dwayne Wilson are gone. Yeah, I mean, as far as the 2018-19 team, the point guards you're projected to have on the roster would be Carter, who would be a senior.
Senior, yep.
And then of course, Howard would be a junior that year.
Correct.
So, it would be good to have some youth in the backcourt. So I agree with you that one spot is definitely reserved for Hauser if he wants it. And then I think I have no idea exactly who Marquette's going to zero in on for 2018, but I would guess a guard would be certainly in order. So as far as 2018 goes, one of those spots is definitely reserved for Joey Hauser if he wants it. By the way, we do know one, at least, visitor for Midnight Marquette Madness, I should say. Race Thompson's a 2018 power forward from Minnesota. He is going to be visiting that night. I'm sure there will be quite a few other guests as well. But hey, Phil, if I want to get greedy for 2018, you want to know a guard I would love to see in a Marquette uniform?
I would love to hear what this is.
Trey Jones, who is the brother of Tyus Jones.
Yes.
Of course, of Duke fame. Now,
do we know anyone that has ties to Duke in any way?
I think we probably do.
I think it's on the tip of my tongue.
Trey Jones is, of course, he's one of the highest rated guards in the 2018 class. And I think he is widely projected to end up at Duke, just like his brother did. However, if Duke, as they often do, tends to land, say, two or three five-star guards ahead of him, maybe there may be somewhere else he'd like to go, and I can think of one place that would love to have him. Because,
yes.
Let's be honest, his brother Tyus has a soft spot in the hearts of Marquette fans everywhere because, well, he prevented us from having to say national champion Wisconsin Badgers.
I will donate to any Kickstarter program he ever wants to start.
But again, I'm shooting for the moon there. And why not? Because Marquette's got two spots available. Trey Jones is a guy I would keep an eye on. If I had to guess where he's going to go today, he's going to end up at Duke like his brother did. But that's a name to follow. Several other guys. I'm going to be careful pronouncing this name. Simi Shitu. He is on the same team, high school team, as Jordan Nwara. So if Marquette is able to land Jordan Nwara, then maybe Simi comes on board as well, or at least that would at least strengthen that tie there. Again, if you can look at the 2018 class, there are just a ton of guys on on that, say, top 50 or so that Marquette is recruiting.
Well, listen, you've got a lot of recruiting cachet if you're coming off a Final Four, right? I mean, that's the expectation for this season. So, you know, maybe these things will happen for us.
Yeah, I would love to see at least Marquette make the tournament, at least maybe make some headway that way with some of these recruits, because visibility certainly is important.
I think it's critical to make the tournament to enable some of the – I mean, because we're selling Wojo's reputation and his connections with, you know, a powerhouse in Duke and some of the legacy of Marquette. But let's be honest, the last 3 years on the court haven't necessarily enamored – I would say the recruiting base with fond memories of Marquette in the tournament. So
yeah, I mean, let's take Tyler Herro, for example. You know, for the last 3 years, so since he was what,
an eighth grader,
like 13, you know, or 14, you know, so that's when you're really starting to form, you know, who's your favorite team. Well, Wisconsin's been going to Final Fours, and Marquette has been not even in the NIT. I mean, not that that's necessarily this coaching staff's fault, but I'm just saying that's the way it is. And so you're going to lose some recruiting battles because of that, because as kids are growing up and they're seeing who's in the Final Four and who's not, where they're going to have their, you know, their biases, for lack of a better term, of which program is preferable to them. So obviously we would love to see progress. I'm trying to temper my expectations because I still think making the tournament is going to be really tough for this team this year. Just a little bit of progress, you would hope, with the experience that they have coming back, even though they lost a heck of a rebounder to the NBA, of course, in Ellington. But, you just hope you can make that progress to start changing kids' minds a little bit. These kids who are 15, 16 right now and really starting to, you know, they watch the tournament more and more and saying, which, you know, do I want to be with these guys or do I want to be with those guys?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it's just about bringing the cachet back to kind of the Marquette name. I mean, love him or hate him, Buzz Williams did a lot to get through his tournament performances and kind of whatever his shtick, if you will. There was a lot of visibility to Marquette and a lot of recognition amongst recruits. You know, Wojo's got his own style and his own cachet, if you will, but the performance on the court isn't there. And I think at the end of the day, unless you're, you know, Larry Brown or, you know, some of these, you know, kind of other big names that don't actually perform all that much, you know,
when Larry Brown has his ways, let me tell you.
Yeah. He's got a unique,
he has
a unique methodology, but like, you know, Steve Lavin, take him as an example, right? I mean, how much did he actually really produce on the court, but had a capability to bring in some highly regarded recruits.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Ben Howland's doing at Mississippi State for now. We'll see if it translates into wins, but boy, he sure is getting some high-profile kids there.
Right. So, you know, there's only so much, you know, that Wojo can trade on reputation before that starts to run out of steam. So we need to see it translate to an actual product on the court, I think, to sustain this forward momentum. Because I don't, having said all that, I think one of the things to keep in mind, whether people realize it or not, I think there's a lot of forward momentum within the program right now. You know, the dearth of talent when Wojo took over compared to where we are now is kind of remarkable how transformed the roster is from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, I mean he took over a pretty empty cupboard. Let's keep it real. I mean, I thought it was amazing he got as many wins as he did in his first year with the roster he took over. And now, I mean, I'm trying to think. Yeah, everyone on the roster except, yeah, I think it's still just three. It would be Dwayne, Dewan, and Luke signed with Buzz, but everyone else signed with Wojo. And of course, Dwayne never played for Buzz, nor did Luke. So the only guy on the roster who even played for Buzz was Juwan, and that was very sparingly.
Right. Yeah. He was kind of nailed to the bench under Buzz. So
yeah. This is Wojo's team for sure. I mean, these are his guys now. I mean, anybody who wanted to transfer out, they have had their opportunity, and they're obviously in for the long haul. So I mean, this is his team, and like, you know, cautiously optimistic that the experience can be a difference with this team, and some of the mistakes that cost him games last year would be eliminated. Still question where the rebounding is going to come from exactly, but
the other thing to take into account, and I don't, it's been so long since we potted, I don't know if we've made this point a million times or not, but you know, we took Ellinson last season because that's what you do. When you got a top 15 NBA talent you take that wants to sign with you, you take him, right?
You never say no thanks.
Right. You know, no, you know what? We're doing something else. Right. But based on my opinion, I don't think Ellenson was necessarily a perfect mesh with where Wojo wants to go, you know, team concept wise and play, but you take the best talent and you shape. That's what good coaching is, right? That's one of the issues that I always had with Crean, was Crean couldn't adapt seemingly to the talent on the roster. You know, he just kind of did whatever he was going to do and hoped the talent could fit. I think Wojo kind of rolled the dice with Ellenson that they could take the most out of his system and get the most out of Ellenson and make it work. And it didn't quite work out because there was just too much inexperience. But this roster, if you look at the makeup, maybe it's a little short. Maybe next year is kind of based on the verbal commitments and whatnot. Maybe that's the perfect Wojo roster, if you will. But this year is certainly a much closer representation of the type of roster I think Wojo wants long-term. And so it'll be interesting to see what he does with those parts. Like, does his basketball theory with the pieces he has, does that make sense and does that work in the modern basketball game, right, in the modern college game? I think this year will tell that tale.
Yeah, I think so. And as far as, like, you know, making a little bit of progress and maybe, you know, I wouldn't say no, Wojo has a ton of naysayers, but obviously there are people who are going to doubt him until he makes a tournament. Maybe if he could just make a little progress, get some people off his back. As I've said before, I think that 2018-2019 team is when he's really gearing up for a big run. Because the Carter, Cheatham class would be seniors that year. Marcus Howard will be a junior that year, and he's chasing a guy like Joey Hauser and a lot of other big names in that 2018 class. If that all falls the way he wants it to, I think that 2018-19 team, which should be the first team in the new building, correct? And then, so that could be, I think, a memorable year if it goes the way Wojo is planning. Again, that's assuming a lot as far as people staying, certain guys committing, and things like that. But I really think he's building towards something really good in about 2018. So I think that's kind of where, kind of like the progress, the long-term plan, I should say, for what Wojo's got. Not that that this year and next year are throwaways. I think they are just, though, steps that he's going to have to take to get to where he really wants to be, because I think by 2018 he'll have the roster that he really wants to have.
Right. Well, you know, Wojo is a known vehement competitor, right? So there is no way, if there's any possible move he can make to win this year and or next year, he's going to do it, right?
So, oh, of course.
Right. So, like you said, it's not throwaway years, but I also think unless somebody like a Henry Ellenson or some a top 10 talent shows up, he is building the team he wants to build over the next couple of years with anticipation that if 2018, 2019, 2020, which feels ridiculous that we're talking about it now, but I mean, that's the reality of the time horizon for this team to really have high expectations. The anticipation is you build that platform where you can have sustained success. I mean, as much as it pains me to say it, you know, Wisconsin has had sustained success for the last couple of years. And they do it by, you know, building that platform, that strategy, that team, and then adding the pieces as needed. And we just don't have the platform yet. So that's what this year and next year is getting that platform fully baked for the next couple of years run.
Yeah, just win a few guys over, and they're going to keep hitting the recruiting trails and hopefully make some more headway there and get a couple more guys.
And if Stan Johnson is really tied to as many of these recruits as he says, as seems to be indicated, I think it's really critical that he stay around at Marquette.
Yeah, gosh, Marquette would miss him horribly. I'd be happy for him if he ever became a head coach somewhere. But he is critical to what Wojo's trying to build right now, for sure. He is doing a great job, and the whole staff is too. But he's the guy who seems to be like one of the top closers for this team. Hey, before we kind of wrap this thing up, the Big East schedule is out, and of course we know who the opponents are. But I thought we'd maybe just not necessarily go through it game by game, but maybe just hit a couple of highlights that we now know about Marquette's Big East schedule. They're going to open on the 28th against Georgetown. That'll be a home game, so Marquette gets to open at home. That's good.
I feel like that's the first time since the new Big East.
Maybe so. I mean, we're only a few years into it, so yeah, you may be right about that. So Marquette opens up. One thing is, we're going to be done with Seton Hall very quickly. Two of the first four games are against Seton Hall.
I'm okay with that.
I think I am, too. I think I am, too. Just a couple things that stood out to me, Phil. Just, again, I'm not going to go through it game by game, per se, but, you know, there's going to be another Big East Marathon, it looks like, on New Year's Day. Marquette's a part of that. They're going to be at Seton Hall on that day. No college football games, no bowl games that day. That's actually, though, that is the last day of the NFL regular season. So that's week 17. So that's what the Big East is competing with on that day. And then they have 6 days until what will be a really big game, I hope, a jam-packed house. Or no, actually, that's a road game. They're going at Villanova after that. So that'll be a really tough early challenge going to Philadelphia on the 7th. Another game that stood out, there's going to be, I'm interested in this, this is a new thing, Martin Luther King Day Marathon. That's on January 16th. Looks like it's going to be an all-day thing. They're playing Butler at 11 a.m.
Yeah, they did a Martin Luther King Day game a couple of, I want to say 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year that Marquette participated in, but it wasn't the whole Big East, but it looks like now it's going to be the Big East. All of the Big East is going to play on Martin Luther King Day, which I think will be what is interesting, because I think it'll be cool, but it sucks for those of us who don't work in government jobs and don't get Martin Luther King Day off.
Yeah, I think it's a good day to get a bunch of high school kids at the game, because they're all out of school, most of them anyway. So, you know, I think a lot of teams on MLK Day try to have like some kind of, some kind of school outreach, something like that, get kids in the community to come to a game. So who knows, might have a lot of high school kids.
The only thing that sucks is that's the DePaul game. That's at home against DePaul, which is always a horror show.
The MLK game is a road game.
Oh, you're right. I got my dates mixed up. You're right. It's at Butler, not the DePaul's the Saturday before.
Yeah, so that's really not Marquette's concern then, getting high school kids. That'll be Butler's problem. Yeah. Okay, day. But yeah, then the other thing I wanted to highlight on the schedule was National Marquette Day. That looks like that's going to be on the 18th, February 18th. That's a home game against Xavier. They have a week to prepare for that too, which is good because they're at Georgetown the week before. So a full week to prepare for Xavier, who should once again be one of the top teams in the Big East.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. So we have Xavier on National Marquette Day on that Saturday. And then the very next game is home against St. John's for Owls Night. So that's kind of interesting. Back to back, what presumably will be big, and the National Marquette Day will be, I would assume, to be very big because that's the 100th anniversary.
Right.
Of
yeah,
Marquette
that's
basketball
the other thing.
Whole season.
Yeah, that's the next thing I'm looking to see is when they'll start releasing. Maybe some. I would assume there'll be some kind of promotions, some kind of big nights where there may be certain guests that are coming back for the 100th anniversary, past greats, players, coaches, whatnot, celebrating big moments. Again, I'm getting greedy. What I would love to see is some throwback jerseys on some nights. I think that would be cool because obviously Marquette has some of the most creative, most unique throwback jerseys in all of college basketball. If you look back at all the stuff they wore in the 70s and stuff like that.
So are you saying throwback in terms of giveaways or throwbacks in terms of the players wearing them?
Oh, players wearing them. Now, if they want to give out jerseys to the fans, that'd be awesome, but that would be quite expensive, I think.
Well, maybe not jerseys, but maybe t-shirt jerseys.
Yeah, jerseys. Yeah, that'd be cool. I could see that.
But yeah, you have to think between the Nike Elite connection and it being the 100th anniversary, and our uniforms haven't really changed in the last 6 to 7 years.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Like, thing is, I don't want to toy with them too much because I really like Marquette's jerseys. I definitely like the colors on them. I like the checkerboard patterns on the side. I could use a new font, maybe.
I do want to see like a new alternative where it is something edgy, like the Bumblebees or something, or the Untucked. I don't think you can legally do the Untucked jerseys.
I don't think you can legally do the Bumblebee either.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But you could probably do an homage to the Bumblebee.
Yeah, you could do something. Right. Homage to the Bumblebee. But that sounds just like a terrible, like, off-Broadway show.
it's in the place where Hamilton started.
Oh, okay.
Well, it hasn't had the same impact.
Homage to the Bumblebee with Phil Bush.
We're going to make tens of dollars here.
Yeah. But, yeah, I definitely hope there will be some kind of promotional things with as far as, like, you know, teams wearing certain jerseys. And, again, you know a lot of players are coming back, whether they're in person or, say, the ones that are, you know, have obligations, whether with, you know, playing overseas or playing in the NBA or jobs, you know, recording something and sending some kind of message. So I would imagine there will be something of that nature in every game, either a former player in attendance or a former player in a video, former coaches saying, sharing memories of Marquette's past, and I think that'll be pretty cool. I have, like, with the official Marquette basketball account has been doing over the summer, like 100 days of Marquette basketball kind of countdown to the season.
Yeah, it's really
100
cool.
Years of Marquette basketball, they kind of throw out a new, you know, story or factoid or something each day. So if you're not following Marquette on Twitter, first of all, what's wrong with you? I mean, why are you listening to us?
Yeah,
if you're not following them
on Twitter.
Yeah, but definitely keep up with that. They've been doing a good job with the Twitter handle in the offseason, just, you know, posting stories, nuggets, facts, stats, things like that. So I think it's been exciting. I'm excited to see what they have next. I have no doubt that, you know, Marquette has got some pretty creative people working in their athletic department. So I think they're going to have some pretty cool stuff for us this year.
Yeah. Well, and jumping back, I completely agree, but jumping back to the schedule here real quick, the one thing I did want to bring up about the schedule that's interesting is, you know, and this may sound cliche, but the last month of this season is really stacked up that in theory, Marquette should be controlling its own destiny because they're playing teams that they're going to have to beat to get a top five or top six finish, probably top five finish in the Big East to put themselves in a position where they're maybe looking at a bid. I mean, you're going to have Xavier twice, Butler, and
Xavier
Creighton.
Twice in the last month. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. And Xavier's probably between Xavier,
weeks.
Butler, and Villanova, and probably Georgetown. Though Georgetown will lose the first weekend in March, we know that.
Oh,
sad bear. Between Georgetown, Butler, Xavier, and Creighton in the last, so let's see, that's the last seven games are against those four teams. Those are the teams you would expect to finish in probably some order in the top four.
Yeah, I think. You know, I guess I haven't researched next year's Big East too much, but just kind of early gut, you know, Villanova's at the top, Xavier's right behind him. Creighton, I think, makes a big leap and is in the top three. And then yeah, we'll see. Georgetown's probably in the middle somewhere. Hopefully
Butler's
Marquette's in the middle somewhere. Oh, Butler's in the middle for sure. You know, Butler, Georgetown, Marquette, it could finish anywhere, you know, in that 4-7, 8 range. I still don't expect much out of St. John's just yet.
And I expect Providence to take a big step backwards.
I do think Providence comes back down to earth because even though I love Ed Cooley, I think he's a great coach. And he's recruited over there very well. When you lose Chris Dunn and Ben Bentle to the NBA, that is just two huge pieces. They'll be tough to replace. So I would expect Providence to come back to the pack a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Because I think I saw something from an influence. There was some stat that said 80% of their offense ran through those two. You know, so
and yet somehow Marquette beat them twice last year.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so with that said, like, maybe they should bring back those two guys because somehow Marquette beat those two twice last year.
Yeah, maybe we can get a special one-time-only eligibility concession. But, no, like I said, I think the finish – To the season is extreme. I mean, the Big East generally is going to be very tough. I mean, this should be exciting times for Marquette fans because while it may be frustrating at times, you're looking at a top three, if not top two, conference in college basketball with the Big East that Marquette's competing in. So finishing in the top five in the Big East is not something to sneer at, especially considering where the roster was. So that's what the goal should be. Finish top five in the Big East, finish strong on the schedule, and then kind of let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I think top five, you know, may seem a little high, but I don't think it's ridiculous to think for that team to have that kind of expectations. Of course, the kids, the players, coaches, you know, they're of course, let's go win a Big East championship, as they should. Go for it. But again, realistically speaking, yeah, I think to shoot for, I think that may be the high end of their ceiling is to get in the top five in the Big East. And if you're in the top five in the Big East, a conference with the strength of schedule that it usually has, I mean, you're probably looking at a tournament berth if you can do that. But, you know, we'll see who Marquette has to fight off for that fifth spot and how, you know, there's always going to be a surprise team in the Big East who's maybe overachieves a little bit. Who knows, maybe Marquette can be that team this year that overachieves a little bit and finishes a little higher than people thought. And we'll see where Seton Hall is in this whole mix. You know, we didn't talk about them very much looking at the schedule. But so, yeah, who knows how that middle of the Big East is going to is going to finish. But I think it's going to be pretty tight in the Big East between, say, 3 and 9.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only teams you could theoretically really write off, I mean, DePaul's DePaul, right?
So, and then Marquette always finds a way to lose to them.
So yeah, every time, every time. But DePaul's DePaul. St. John's has probably got a ways to go. And Providence, like we said, Ed Cooley's a good coach, but they may fall back. So, you know, it's probably, if you're looking middle, you're going to say what? Villanova and Xavier are probably top two.
Like I said a second ago, like, yeah, I think those two are top two. Creighton is going to take a big leap forward because they return so much experience. And then I think it gets into the question marks as far as who has the most guys who are going to take steps forward, surprise freshmen, things like that, transfers that we don't know much about yet. You know, Marquette, Georgetown, Seton Hall,
Butler.
Those guys are all, three through eight.
Between Creighton, Butler, Marquette, Providence, Georgetown, and Seton Hall. Those six teams. It's going to be basically, you know, in theory, it's going to be three of those teams make the tournament, three don't.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it.
You know, and so that's who our competition truly is, right? Obviously, you want to go out and win every game, but you've got to play as good, if not better, than those six teams.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. So again, so there's the Big East schedule. If you live in the Milwaukee area, I hope you can get some tickets. They got, you know, Marquette's got a pretty sweet schedule this year. Even if you can't make all the games, that four game plan they advertised, where you get National Marquette Day and you get Wisconsin. And one other game that was in there is pretty good. You get a four game schedule. They have some pretty good plans, so definitely get out, support that team, get your tickets if you haven't gotten them already. I think the team's going to be fun to watch this year.
Yeah, well, and it's going to be interesting with the Admirals moved out of the Bradley Center. There's some pretty prime time game. I mean, there's a couple of night games on Saturday night.
National Marquette Day. That's a Saturday night game.
Versus Butler. That's a night game. Milwaukee, and so that it's going to be some really good primetime basketball that'll, especially if we're playing well, should generate some good buzz and some good visibility for the program.
All right, very excited. Hey, by the way, before we get out of here, I want to touch on this. Did you see the Big East Coast Bias? They did a all half decade team.
Oh yes.
So you could pick five guys from the last 5 years. The Marquette five, like, some of them were obvious. Of course, Jay Crowder and Jimmy Butler on the team, and then it was Darius Johnson Odom, Vander Blue, and Henry Ellenson. Were those the five you picked, Phil?
Those were the five.
Because, no. the last one was Gardner. That was the one people were arguing about.
Oh, you know
about.
What? No, that's what I was struggling with. I picked Gardner over DJO.
Okay, you picked him over DJO. See, some people are arguing Gardner over Ellenson because the argument was contributions to the program over NBA talent, which I could see that. But I honestly voted for those five, the five that got it, that got in. Because I couldn't – certainly, to me, three NBA guys were a lock. Even, you know, Ellenson was a one-year guy on a not-so-great team. He was a great player and set all kinds of freshman records. So he had to be in there for me. And then Vander Blue was a no-brainer as well. You can't leave Vander Blue off. And to me, DJO, even though he hasn't been, say, quite the pro as some other guys have, like Dwight Bikes has been a better pro than him, which has been amazing. But DJO was, I mean, he was amazing at Marquette. I mean, he was one of the best guards Marquette's had in the last decade or so.
Yeah. So the reason I went with Gardner over DJO was, for me, it was not only was it talent, but it was kind of the joy and the.
Gardner's like an all time fan favorite. Isn't
right.
He?
That has to be taken. I mean, God bless DJO. I love the guy. I think he's supremely talented. He had Buzz has reserved a special place of hatred and love in my heart. DJO's putback dunk that sent Buzz dancing across the sideline to on YouTube to walk it out was
one of Marquette's rare victories over Louisville.
Yeah, and all the more reason I loved it so much. I loved DJO as a player, but I just don't think other than that moment. every one of those other players, except maybe with the exception of Ellenson, but even Ellenson had the shot against Wisconsin. Every one of those players, but DJO, has very, very distinct memories for me, both from a talent and from an enjoyment standpoint. DJO was a talent, and he was good. I just didn't remember a lot of he brought, you know what I mean? He brought the fun in the game, or really stood out as.
Well, yeah, the DJO, like for me, obviously the putback dunk against Louisville, but obviously he also had the big three-pointer against Syracuse in the NCAA tournament.
That's true.
That put him in the Sweet 16? Yes. Yeah. So that was the first time Marquette got out of the first weekend in a while, I think. Because I think that was the first time they got out of the first weekend, maybe since the Final Four run.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yes.
Yeah, because the three amigos, they never got out of the first weekend.
Right, because one of them always got hurt.
Right. Yeah, and then there was a couple years they missed the tournament, and then you know Lazar Hayward's year they didn't get out of the first round, or they lost in the first round. So yeah, DJO hit that shot that finally got us to that second weekend for the first time, since the Final Four run. So that was probably my biggest DJO memory for sure, hitting that shot against Syracuse. But for me, those five, you had to take those five. I'm surprised Jay Crowder only got 95% of the vote.
I want to know who those 5% are and revoke their card.
Probably the same people who decided to fill out a ballot and put Jamal Ferguson and Rob Rosina and Jake Thomas for some votes.
Eric Williams, because he had a really great 2 minutes before the game to he started over Jay Crowder.
Well, those were good times. Those were good times.
I think there is an argument that Eric Williams started in place of Jay Crowder.
And he can tell all of his friends about it. You guys know I used to start over that guy? I think that's a great note to end this podcast on.
I agree.
As always, everybody, we thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. Love your feedback. You can always hit us up on Twitter, Crack Sidewalks, the team page. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF 23. Find us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, even if you think we're terrible. Maybe at least be kind and give us 2 stars out of 5. But leave us a rating, leave us a review on iTunes, and of course you can download us there, take us everywhere. Phil, I guess we'll probably do this again, maybe Marquette Madness-ish time.
I think we're looking another 4 weeks out, and we'll do another pod. The roster should be firmed up. We'll maybe have another commitment or two, and we can get really ready for the season. And just one other programming note, if you will. There is a new logo that one Joe McCann, you may be familiar with him on
like,
this pod.
Like the old logo I put together looked like it was thrown together in, say, a fourth grade art class. This one looks
come on,
more
that's being generous second grade.
Yeah, this one looks more like a seventh grade art class. So I think we've upgraded a little bit. I deal with video editing, not so much Photoshop. So we had to at least update a little bit and look not so freaking amateur. So we're still amateur, just not as amateur.
It's not blatantly obvious we're amateur. You just have to listen to 30 seconds.
Yeah, not like I went on Photoshop and took all of 2 minutes to make it. Like this one took 4 minutes.
Amazing work.
Again, hit us up online, social media, all that stuff. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you Marquette Madness time. Till then, seashells and balloons.